Ollie Wright as he delves into the minds of some truly remarkable education leaders in Talking Heads.
Hi, and welcome to Talking Heads on Teacher Hub Radio. I'm Oliver, your host, and today I'm really looking forward to talking with a former head teacher. This is Simon Antwis. Hi, Simon.
Hi there, how are you doing, Oliver?
I'm all right, thanks. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Just looking out the window and the wind blowing the trees.
The storm is incredible at the moment, isn't it? It's quite strange sometimes recording and thinking, well, in 2 or 3 weeks' time, people are going, oh yeah, I remember that storm. But yeah, it's pretty fierce at the moment, isn't it?
Absolutely.
So where are you from, Simon?
I'm from Bristol, just outside Bristol, near the coast. In fact, I can see Wales out of the window.
Wow.
It's a lovely position.
Yeah, sounds it. And you've been a head teacher. You were a head teacher of three different schools, weren't you?
That's right, yeah. Two schools in South Wales, actually, and then a school in Buckinghamshire.
Yeah, and what were they like? Well, I know, but for our listeners, were they primary, secondary, independent?
They were all through independent schools, and that was a deliberate decision on my part.
Yeah.
I've worked in the state sector before, and been part of an academy set up in Bristol, where we created all through school there, and I just loved that model.
Yes.
For education, as a chance to get to know children for the entire journey and iron out those transition issues.
Yeah.
And I think to empower my staff to learn about what it takes to be a primary school teacher, and for primary school teachers to learn what it takes to be a secondary school teacher, and the level of collaboration was fantastic.
Yeah.
Because they're all on one site, so you can see the primary school children playing in the playground next to senior school children, and there's a chance for children to interact at those age levels as well, which is fantastic.
That's brilliant. What differences did you come across between primary and secondary that were really striking?
In terms of the teaching?
In terms of the teaching, I'm thinking at the moment, yes.
Yeah, I think I've taught some primary school lessons whilst I was there, but to prove the point, I think. What I found was it was exhausting being with the children all day.
Yes.
I think if they're trying to organise your day, whereas I think as a secondary school teacher, and you've got natural breaks, you have the odd non-contact period, you were jumping from year 7 to year 13. I mean, that had its challenges as well.
Yes.
The year 7 class coming in, and then the 6th one would turn up, and I would always say, don't underestimate how much I love teaching you guys.
Yes.
A, because you've chosen my subject and you're passionate about it, and B, because you're so much more orderly.
Yeah.
And I can focus on the subject. But my hat's off to primary school teachers, and my wife's a primary school teacher, and I don't know how they do it in terms of the planning preparation it takes to organise a whole day.
Yes. So you were never tempted with primary at the beginning, were you?
Good question. I don't think it actually came up, and that's a real shame, because I think I just, at that age, I was a biologist and I wanted to teach biology, and it didn't really occur to me. But once I got involved with all through education, I really think I missed out building that skill set.
Yeah.
And I would, if I was giving anyone advice, I'd say, look, try your best to do cross-phase teaching or working through school if you can, because it gives you such a powerful skill set.
Yeah, it certainly does, doesn't it? What made you choose to be a secondary school teacher then? Was it not just that passion for the subject, or was there something else that went on?
Well, I thought I'd have to be quite honest with you and your listeners, is that I don't think I wanted to be a teacher.
Right.
And there are lots of reasons for that, which weren't really well thought through, but a lot of my family were teachers, and it was a mixed bag in terms of how much fulfilment they got from it as a career.
Yeah.
And of course, when your parents have a certain career as a teenager, you try and avoid it like the plague.
Yes.
And I can remember the exact point when I changed my mind on that. I'd graduated at a time when we were in a recession, there were no jobs available. Mm-hmm. And I'd applied for jobs as a research scientist, which were all short-term contracts, 3 or 6 months. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was going absolutely nowhere. And I was actually working in Pizza Hut. I was sitting around at lunchtime, and a friend of mine said, you should be a teacher.
Right.
And
what was it that they noticed about you?
I don't know. I think, I like to share things. I like to talk about biology.
Yeah.
aspects, think about their personality. You know, I coached football as well at that point, and I had a good relationship with young people.
Yeah.
I don't know, I think I'd have to go back and ask them, but
sometimes people do just spot that potential in somebody, and you almost can't put your finger on what it is, but some people just see it there, don't they?
No, I think my career has been punctuated with someone saying, you ought to be, .. And always the most unlikeliest of people would say that sentence.
Yeah.
I learned to listen to it, I'm glad I did.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you did as well. So, what was your route into teaching from that, from Pizza Hut to secondary school teacher? Did you immediately go and enrol on a PGCE?
That's the first thing I did. And I spent a year at Jordan Hill.
Right.
And absolutely loved it. I can remember my interview at Jordan Hill, and I can remember my first taught lesson at a really challenging school.
Yeah.
In a really challenging part of Glasgow. And I was very lucky to have really good mentors in these schools that volunteered to help me out with the tricks of the trade and what skill set I needed. And I flew through it. I really enjoyed it. I can remember it really clearly, how much fun I had.
And did that give you a sort of indication of the type of school you were going to be comfortable working in later on? Or was it just that whole, I want to be a teacher, it's great type of feeling?
Yeah, it's funny. At this point, my girlfriend was doing a PGC as well, and she was doing hers in Dundee. And we the exact same question came up, but where are we going to teach? What sort of school are we going to teach in? And I think we just agreed, let's apply to the schools we think that we'd have a sense of fulfillment in. And whoever gets a job first, that's where we'll live. And it's quite shocking to think that's how little planning we put into it. And we're both very lucky, we landed some excellent jobs to start off with.
Yeah, it's shocking, but it's actually such a good way to think about it, to think, right, where am I going to be fulfilled, where am I going to be most useful, and to then go with that, rather than sort of sticking a pin in a map and going, right, I need to live in this place. I think it's a really good way of doing it.
I think I was looking for a school that we had a broad curriculum, offered lots of sport and activities and trips and things like that I could go on.
Is that where you ended up then?
Yeah, I ended up at a state grammar school in South London. And immediately started teaching biology. I was spared the A-level for the first year, but I coached the football, coached cricket, coached rugby, went on trips, walking trips to the Dales and the Peak District, and on foreign trips, and threw myself into it. Absolutely. And I became a bit of a sort of one of the teachers applies for everything.
Yes.
Picked up lots of little jobs, and much to the mocking of my colleagues at the time, but looking back at it, I'm glad I did that.
Is that a good thing to do then, for new teachers, to just say yes to stuff and then see what happens?
I think if I was advisor, to be a bit more judicious.
Yes.
Cherry pick, I think my carpet building technique probably wasn't the best tactic, but it worked out for me in the end.
Yeah.
I got ahead of your job, and there's other bits and bobs which I helped out with the timetable and all sorts of that. So I think I was a bit of a volunteer and said yes to things, but I don't regret that.
No. And how was the teaching? Did you find it as, I don't know, I don't want to say easy, because I don't think it is easy for anyone, but was it something that you sort of fell into naturally, or did you have to work really hard to sort of polish your craft, as it were?
I wouldn't like to be arrogant to say that I felt that I was natural, but I did really enjoy it. And I think I'm lucky. I'm a tool man, and I admire people who don't have that sort of physical presence. So, but I think what worked for me is that I was coaching sport all the time, and I was on trips all the time.
Yes.
Activities. I think children naturally look. I don't know if they do it consciously, but I think they. They can see that there's someone who's committed, and they're always around, and they're always there. And I think my advice to any teacher is, if you've got behaviour management issues or you're worried about that, if you throw yourself into a school life, I think the kids do work it out, and they think, right, this guy deserves our attention and our cooperation because of what he puts into the school.
It helps in building relationships as well, doesn't it? If you're seeing children in different situations or sort of having different talents that you wouldn't necessarily see in your biology classroom, it just helps build that relationship and almost show that you care, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think relationship's a key word for me, you know, and I think also a sense of humour. I remember there was a lad called Sam, I can remember it clear as day, and he said to me, "Sir, what happened if we all go up and walked out? What would you do?" And I said to Sam, "Well, why don't you try?" And he just sat back down. So, at the time, and you would have no idea how terrified I was that he was.
No, you can always picture that sort of terror under the surface of you going, "Well, what if he does? I have no idea." But you've always got to call that bluff, haven't you, sometimes?
It was, a bluff.
Yeah, definitely. So did you set out into teaching with a view to having a sort of long-term plan of I'm going to be ahead of year, I'm going to be ahead of what house or whatever the steps were towards eventually headship, or were you just looking at the next year or so and getting good at what you were doing?
I think if you asked my colleagues at the time who I'm still friends with, they would say absolutely Simon was always going to do that, he plans for everything, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you honestly, no.
Yeah,
I didn't think of that at all. But I wanted further challenges and opportunities to do things that are different, because I don't think, and there's no comment on people who do this, but I don't think I would be a person who could do 40 years of the same thing.
No.
Year after year after year after year. Mm-hmm. And I needed different things. So, planning trips, for example, I would do that when I was really bored.
Yeah.
Or look forward to planning some more sports fixtures or sports at all, things like that to punctuate the day. So, no. And I think, looking at my career now, I think there were times when there was a crisis and the finger would point at me.
Yeah.
Someone would say, "You ought to." And I often think about, if I ever write an autobiography, what I would call it.
Yeah.
And I've got two working titles. One is, "He stepped over all the dead bodies." And the second one is, "He fell under gunfire."
Right.
I think that seems to be what happened in my career, is that there were opportunities that arose from something that wasn't working very well. And looking back, I seem drawn to those.
Yeah.
I don't know why. But
was that you were drawn to them, or that you just have the sort of natural, I don't want to say ability, because it's maybe not an ability, but the sort of the wherewithal to deal with those situations and people look to you like that?
I think it's a bit of naivety and a bit of ignorance involved, in that I didn't really know what the issues were. And before this started, we had a chat, and you said something similar about taking on a job without realising quite what the issues were.
Yes.
And my advice to anyone would be, if you like to be in the dark, then fine, but if you don't, you need to interview back when you're an interview. It's just important you know exactly what's going on before you take on responsibility, and I didn't. Mm-hmm. I think that's to do with me undervaluing myself and just thinking, I'll be delighted if I get offered a job and I'll be so flattered, I'll take it. But it seemed to work out, I think there were no grand plans to be ahead.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'd be the first head to have said that.
Not at all. I hear that quite regularly, that it's always to sort of step by step, and people just nudge doors and take on responsibilities and eventually land up somewhere they haven't really intended to be, but really enjoy it.
I think that, as I said before, my career's been punctured with people who have said things like, "You ought to."
Yes.
And in terms of headship, which I was avoiding, it's just a training day, and we were involved in a role play about mentoring, which I had set up, and the person opposite me was a data manager called Susie, and during the mock interview, which was being observed by someone else, it turned into a sort of professional conversation about, why aren't you ahead?
Yeah.
And to the point where I had to stop it and say, "Hang on, I think this has gone a bit beyond the remit," but after she said, "Seriously, you want to think about it." So often people see it in you before you see it in yourself.
Yeah.
I've always responded when that's happened.
That's really good. You're listening to Talking Heads on Teacher Hub Radio. I'm Oliver, in conversation with Simon Antwis.
Teacher wellbeing should be a priority for all schools. Whether you're leading or teaching, Crown House Publishing has wellbeing books for all, including Love Teaching, Keep Teaching, A Practical Guide to Staying Well by Peter Radford,
Of Teaching, Learning and Sherbet Lemons, a book all about putting the fizz back into your teaching by Nina Jackson, and Celebrating Teachers by Gary Towers and Chris Henley. A feel-good celebration of all that teachers do. Use code HUG20 for 20% off at www.crownhouse.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Brian and I'm a children's author, but I'm also disabled and a full-time wheelchair user. My stories, The Adventures of Grandad Wheels, are perfect for all primary school children. My books help kids understand about disability, giving them a good laugh at the daft things that Grandad Wheels gets up to with his grandson Charlie. To buy my books and to find out how I can visit your school, either in person or via Zoom, just visit my website, grandadwheels.com. All proceeds go to charity.
So Simon, what happened after that? Because you were obviously classroom teaching within a secondary school. How did you move on from there? What were the next steps?
I think the biggest step for me was that I'd been a boarding house master, which was a brilliant job. Mm-hmm. Done it for 5 years with a really young family.
Yeah.
Living on site, full body immersion, I'd call it.
Yes.
At a school overhead, it was fantastic. And a job like house mastering is, it can become what you would only do.
Yes.
Which is not no issue, but it's something I've done for 15, 20 years, but I didn't feel that, as my family was growing, but that's what I wanted. So, and I sensed I was one notch below what was really fascinating me about school leadership.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to SLT and things like that. So I was in an SLT position, so I applied for a head of sixth form job at a school in Bristol, which is a job, probably one of my favourite jobs I've ever had, I'd say, being close to young people of that age, and all the excitement and the prospect of the next journey was terrific, and young people are doing everything they're passionate about.
Yeah.
So, and then the school I was at was a bit of a crisis point. And the governors decided to go for an academy conversion back in the day.
Yeah.
An academy program at its height. They were looking for flagship schools to convert, especially from the independent sector. Mm-hmm. And I got swept along with that. The head who was there at the time didn't fancy that. So another head came in who was inspirational to me. And we had so much fun. And we set an academy up in about 9.5 months.
Yes.
I was offered a vice principal job out of that. And I still remember the first day the new intake turned up, co-educational year sevens that we'd never seen before, and we were standing in the playground with the other rest of the SLT, and all of us secretly thinking we're not sharing, wow, what's going to happen now?
Yes.
These children ran around like there were no cares in the world, and we were thinking, wow, this school's going to change completely. And that journey was incredible. Opening new buildings, getting involved with the local authority, getting involved with looked after children and hard to place panels, and the impact we could have on children from deprived areas in Bristol. Really set a fire inside me. I thought, I absolutely loved that role.
Yeah. Was it a difference that you felt you could make there, or was it just the excitement of something that was new that you'd been involved in creating, or was it a bit of both?
It was a bit of both, and effectively saving the school as well. It was.
Yes.
I think that's why I'm sort of addicted to crisis situations, because I think you're having a massive impact, completely in terms
yes.
of your colleagues, the children, offering a new school available to all the children in Bristol.
Yeah.
Yeah, then we have no catchment area, so it's freely available across the city. It's got to be a fee-paying independent school to an academy.
Yeah.
Free admission, obviously, in terms of fees.
Yeah.
I just felt that I could do more and have more impact in different schools than I had before. And so, out of a situation that seemed like bad luck, I think looking back on it, that was the most fortunate thing that happened to me. And a new principal joined the school, and he was an inspiration to me as well.
Yes. How was it in that school? I presume you had an existing building or an existing sort of school setup that you'd then relaunched. Was there a sort of hangover of people assuming it was independent or it was exclusive or it was whatever the previous school had been?
So was it as much as you had two schools in one for about 4 or 5 years because
yes.
The new year's had a cohort, 120 pupils there, and the cohort was above the ex-independent school,
yeah.
And very small cohorts. And we worked really hard to manage that.
Yeah.
And it was a cathedral site, so it was ancient buildings, quite dilapidated, and obviously we were able to refresh those and build new buildings as well. And it was quite a task for the SLT to make sure that those schools became interwoven.
Yes.
I think we did a really good job.
How did you manage that then? How did you manage to bring everyone together and interweave those two very, very different school communities?
I think it's about having a shared vision for the school.
And
make sure the children are involved in developing that vision and what our core values were. So there was a lot of work done on that. We did a lot of work on student voice, making sure that everyone felt they were making a contribution.
Yeah.
We also had to work with hard with staff. Some people didn't see the vision and they were free to apply elsewhere with our best wishes.
Yeah.
But there was no sense of moving people out at all. It was, we wanted everyone to come on the journey. And
yeah.
I think the majority of people were very excited by it. And when they saw buildings coming up and they saw the new cohort coming in. And
yeah.
I think there was also a change in a revolution in terms of pedagogy and how lessons were delivered. And I certainly found that really invigorating.
Yes.
Being in my career for 10, 15 years at that point, I felt I hadn't had great CPD. But it was all self-taught. Suddenly there was a revolution where we taught and connected with other schools for the first time across Bristol. And when I was struggling to know what to do, I could say hand on heart, I would pick the phone up to anyone in my position in another academy in Bristol, and they always picked the phone up.
Yeah.
And that was really touching.
That is, it's one of those things where you have to do it to get outside your own school sometimes and go and see other places, or you have to go and speak to people, and people are very accommodating to that, aren't they? And you always learn so much when you literally talking to somebody else about what their school's happening, what's happening with them, how they're managing things. But also that level of support that you get from people where, just being able to offload to somebody or somebody that actually understands what you're going through sometimes is so important, isn't it?
You're absolutely right, which is why from that point onwards, I wanted to work in groups of schools. I wanted to be in an organisation where there were 50, 60 heads to talk to, and you could pick the back phone up and ask anyone if your experiences has happened in your life. You got the advice and me to do the same for other people. It would be my advice to anyone, if you're looking for a career and you're picking a school, try and pick a school in a group. And you'll find that there's always lots of people at your level who you can consult with and collaborate with improve your journey.
Yeah, it's so important, isn't it? How did you manage that change in pedagogy as well? Because I would imagine there'd be some teachers who that would be really exciting and invigorating, but there would be others that if they've been doing something one way for a number of years, it's almost a challenge to that. How did you take everyone with you, or take some of the team with you in that situation?
I think it's important to let them know that I was on the same journey.
Yes.
I wasn't in any way suggesting I was an expert in terms of new ways of working. So leading by example, I think, and being in, whenever we had training sessions, being sat next to my colleagues and not delivering from the front, but I think, and showing others that I could be brave as them, and that there were better ways to do things. We could learn from what was going on in the state sector. But equally, making sure that they understood that we had things to offer as well, both of the things were happening in our schools before academisation, that was important to keep as well. So we had a sort of philosophy of what we're going to keep, what we're going to preserve, what we're going to change, and it was all done in a sensible way, and there was a reason why.
Yes.
And evidence-based, this has been happening, this is the impact it's had. We did that in terms of the way we managed behaviour in the school, and we delivered the lessons, but some people want to align with it, and that's fine. But, you know, if they were going to stay with us, you know, we were looking for preparation and people to follow the vision for the school.
Yeah. It's hard, isn't it, sometimes, though, if there are those difficult conversations sometimes to have about, you know, this is where we're going, we're all going together, this is how it has to be done. Is that something you felt prepared for, having sort of almost stepped into that role, or was it something that you developed over the preceding years and that gradually got used to?
I think if I spend time convincing myself that I believe in it, then I've never had an issue passionately telling someone else.
Yeah.
Or telling someone else to do the same. If I felt I was delivering a three-line rip or I didn't believe what I was saying, I felt that was more difficult. But I was led by people who were open to challenge. So if I didn't agree with something, there were various things that there was sort of, you know, a whole range of things we could have introduced to the school.
Yeah.
And often I would say, I don't think, A, we're not ready for that now, or I think we need to achieve this first and manage the change in baby steps, you know, stopping for a rest as well and regathering ourselves. And I think if you take stuff with you in terms of time, capacity, I think they'll be understanding. So I think we were careful that we didn't sort of completely change into a fully fledged conventional academy.
It is sometimes it's very difficult to manage that pace of change, isn't it? And if particularly if you're passionate about it and you want, you know, what the school can be, you know, where it can go, you know, the difference you can make, you sort of want everyone on board, and sometimes it's just being a little bit patient and making sure everyone goes at the right pace and that you all go together. But it does take that patience, doesn't it?
It's also being brave enough that if you get a delegation of, you know, well-meaning, well-informed, respected colleagues, I have on occasion thought, okay, we've got a point.
Yes.
So we'll delay this a year, or we'll do it a different way, or we'll abandon it together. I think if you're prepared as a leader to do that in a judicious way, then I think that staff will believe you the next time you want to deliver something that's less negotiable.
Yes.
He does listen when we're telling him something isn't going to work. So I think that's something I learned as a leader, that you've got to have a listening ear.
Yes.
And genuinely, if you feel that the point has been proven to you, that it is good leadership to accept that.
Yeah. You need to, don't you? What was the pace like then? Was it? I'm trying to sort of think of what question I'm trying to ask you. Was it what time frame did it take to get things how you wanted them to be and working together in the way you wanted to be?
To get the academy set up was about 9 months. It was bonkers. And, you know, to illustrate a point, you know, I was having to, you know, we had offer letters to go out for March the 1st. And I was driving in my own car to the central post office in Bristol with a bag of 243 letters.
Yeah.
And if it hadn't been leap year, we might not have done it. So, extra day, it was February the 29th. So, it was frenetic, this setup. And looking back on it, it was a bit insane, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it was achieved, and I still look back on it as a highlight, in terms of, you know, working together in that sort of situation for a common cause.
Yeah.
I think after the academy got set up, you know, I think we realised the size of the job in terms of, you know, the way the school was, you know, planning the expansion of it, you know, the intake we were getting, retraining the staff. Yeah,
it's massive, isn't it?
Looking back on it, I think we would give ourselves more time.
Yeah, definitely. You're listening to Talking Heads on Teach Hub Radio. I'm Oliver, in conversation with Simon Antwis.
Saracens High School is a values-driven school with a family ethos. We opened in 2018, so in September our first cohort will begin year 11, so it's a great time to join us. As we expand in size again, we're recruiting for a subject lead in social sciences and a subject lead for computer science. We're also still looking for a second in English, as well as a teacher of PRE. Check out our website for more information about these vacancies and our unique culture. at www.saracenshigh.org. Saracens High School is a values-driven school with a family ethos. We opened in 2018, so in September our first cohort will begin Year 11, so it's a great time to join us. As we expand in size again, we're recruiting for a subject lead in social sciences and a subject lead for computer science. We're also still looking for a second in English, as well as a teacher of PRE. Check out our website for more information about these vacancies and our unique culture at www.saracenshigh.org.
So Simon, after that frenetic pace of all the change and all the setting up the new school and getting everything going and then sort of realising the size of the task, how long did you stay there in the end?
I stayed there for another 5 years.
It was a
fantastic period in my career. I had great colleagues, a great principal, a great co-vice principal, still friends with them all now. Mm-hmm. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And the school was going from strength to strength to strength. And it was great to be part of it. But I think after 5 years, I felt that I was ready to consider my own school.
Yes.
I was encouraged by those around me, including Susie, the data manager. But at that point, I didn't know the QH.
Yes.
Just to test the water. And I felt that I enjoyed that immensely.
Yeah.
I think that what I noticed about when I was in the state sector compared to when I was in the independent sector, the level of CPD was on a different level.
Yes.
I felt during my time in the independent sector very under-trained. Obviously my wife was on a journey as well, and she was saying things that I didn't understand. And I could see that she was getting a CPD journey that I wasn't even getting close to.
Yeah. So,
but the MPQH really helped to address that and convinced me that I was ready for headship.
Yeah, so where did you go?
So at that point, I could have put that. I was looking for any school, whether it was a state school or an independent school. I think I wanted to go start with a small school that I felt like I could have an impact in, that needed me. I wanted to go to a school that was highly established with a great reputation, and that I would just be coasting there. But I was picking up all three schools, all on the same site. I felt that there was a part of me missing in terms of primary education, and obviously conversation with my wife, and all the joy she was getting from being involved in primary schools as a teacher and as a head.
Yeah.
It was something I felt I was missing out on. So I found a school in Cardiff initially, took the headship up there. And had a great time.
How was that though, stepping into almost, I don't want to call it the hot seat, but it is that sort of sense of you are the ultimate responsible person at that point, which when you've gone from a team of people working together, it's a very different setup, isn't it? How did you find that?
Scary.
Yeah. I think you'd be insane, because it's one of those things where almost people sort of feel as if, maybe are ready for headship and they start applying and they get a headship. And it's almost one of those things that nobody tells you until you're suddenly ultimately responsible and you perhaps don't know everything and you don't always feel totally prepared for it.
No, I think the analogy I use is that you have to quickly switch into pub landlord mode. You've always got to be on form.
Yes.
You can't transmit your mood whilst running a pub. Whilst you're doing customers. So that's what I think I found hard. I'd left my office, would steel myself to look on form, and no matter what was on my mind, to transmit in the right way, because people do feed off you.
Yes.
And I knew that as a vice principal and a teacher, that I fed off my head, and if they were confident and looked like they're in control.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of sort of swan-like activity going on.
Yes.
I was, I've got great friends and colleagues who do pick the phone up. And my wife was also ahead at the time, so we could share our anxieties and our tactics and how we would conduct ourselves at school.
Yeah.
But I think looking back on it now, I think it's a bit like childbirth. If you knew what it involved, you wouldn't do it.
You just wouldn't do it, would you?
I know I'm speaking as a man there, but in terms of the expenditure and the lack of sleep, if you told you all the detail, you wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
I think I'm glad I didn't know the detail to some degree. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I'd have overthought it. So I'm a proud underthinker when it comes to taking on jobs like that.
Yeah. What advice would you give to somebody new into headship then, if they were setting out or about to set out? What would you suggest they did?
The first thing I do if someone says they want to be head and ask my advice is I ask them how old they are.
Yeah.
And because I got asked that once by one of my previous heads, mm-hmm. It was a really good question. When you say that you're 35, or something as young as that, I think you need to say to someone, what's the rush?
Yes.
It's not a race. You're not a better head because you get there first. Mm-hmm. It's a bit like parents who demand their children take exams when they're 13.
Yeah.
So no one will remember that exam, that C grade, what you're going to get, was done at 13.
Yeah.
There's no prize for coming first. So, and equally, it's a very demanding job, mm-hmm. and you've got to work out how much you can, your time and your years, you can devote to it.
Yeah.
I equate it to trying to finish swimming a race. You've got to time your touch to the end of the pool really well. Otherwise, you have to throw in an extra stroke, mm-hmm. which lose you valuable seconds and means that you're enjoying your job less.
Yeah.
So that's the first question I'd say is, how old are you? Do you need to do it now?
Yes.
Have you thought it through? Who are you competing with? So don't be in a rush. I think second bit of advice is, you have to be yourself. It is too tiring.
Yes.
And draining to try and be someone else. So that would be the second bit of advice. The third bit of advice is interview back.
Yeah.
Because you're just as valuable to that school as that school is valuable to you, particularly if you've got a first headship.
Yes.
You're junior-eyed, and if you get offered it, you're so flattered you'll take it.
Yeah.
You find yourself in a very tricky situation with an impossible job. So, I think those three things are things I would tell.
That last one I think is really interesting, because I think a lot of people just don't do that and almost undervalue themselves. And it's that, I want to get a headship, so I'll apply for anything and I'll take anything if it's given. And it has to be the right place for you. It has to be somewhere you're comfortable, and it has to be somewhere that's manageable for you. And if it's a really tough first headship, it can break people, can't it?
Correct. And try not to be dazzled by the exterior. It's a bit like buying a car, Don't buy a car based on the cup holder and the stereo. Get under the bonnet, kick the tyres.
Yeah.
Looking back, I think of my headships, not all of them were the right ones.
Yeah. But you've done three headships, haven't you?
I have. Yeah. Which I can't believe.
Sometimes when you look back and you think, it can't be me. How did you find them all, though? Were they very similar, or were they very, very different experiences?
They were very similar, but I would say the correlation for me is how much you enjoy it depends on the people around you.
I don't mean
all the people around you. So I remember one head, Bristol Cathedral Choir School, said to me, you're a great SLT, and I'm lucky to have you, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, he's just saying that,
Yeah.
But now I know he meant it. And I thought, loyalty is really important. Not misplaced loyalty, or just, unqualified loyalty, but you need a team that are loyal to you. They're brave enough to say, Simon, that's going to be a disaster, without taking any sense of enjoyment from it.
Yeah.
You need great governance around you, above you. And you need great middle leadership, because it's middle leadership that's the key. It's not the senior leadership. It's the middle leadership that will enact your vision and carry it out in the classroom and beyond.
Yeah.
So, I have experienced varying degrees of that support.
Yes.
being around you, and it definitely correlates with how much I enjoyed that job.
Yeah. It's interesting you say about the middle leaders and the governance, because that's one of those things that almost gets missed sometimes. People look at, you know, have I got the right deputy? Is it the right sort of area where I'm comfortable? And then go, yeah, well, I'll apply there. And actually, it's those people on the ground who are going to do the day-to-day subject leadership, middle leadership, and the governance that's going to sort of look out for you and hold you to account and support you when they need to, that makes the difference, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, how long were you in each of the headships?
Well, the first headship didn't work out, and that was because the school belonged to a group, and they decided to sell it.
Right.
And they sold it publicly, and that made it really difficult to manage the emotion with the stakeholders. Mm-hmm. My son was at the school, so. Sympathy from the parents. And me and my wife have had six hedges between us, and you know, the enjoyment success rate is about 50%. And that would be something else I'd say to you know, want to be heads, is that, you know, sometimes things don't work out and it's absolutely nothing to do with you.
Yes.
It's something I didn't ask you to do. I didn't ask about the stability of the relationship with the group and then the school. I didn't ask about the strategic plan for the type of school I was looking at being remaining as part of the group.
Yeah.
And, you know, we got into a situation where I couldn't do any headship leading movements ahead because I was managing the emotion for
in that sort of situation, wouldn't I?
Yeah. And then, I was picked up by another group of schools, and, you know, I resigned from that school because I felt that it completely changed direction from what I was told at interview, which was a real shame. I was very affectionate about the school. As I said, I sent my son there.
Yeah.
It was emotional round. But my advice to any other head is that sometimes things do go wrong, but it always works out in the end.
Yes, it does, doesn't it? It's surprising sometimes when you're up to your ears in it and you think this is never going to happen.
Absolutely, especially for friendship. Yeah, and you're blaming yourself for.
Yeah.
What could I have done differently? Looking back on it now, you know, with the benefit of time, it was just one of those things, and there's nothing that I could have done about it.
Yeah,
some good came out of it.
But that didn't put you off headship either, because some people, if they try and it doesn't work out, they just sort of turn around and go, right, it's not for me. I'm either leaving education or I'm not going to be ahead anymore. But you went back.
I did.
Yeah.
Well, someone, you know, saw something in me at the time, I got another opportunity, and I thought I'll give it another go, and I was very lucky to be offered a fantastic school in South Wales, where I had a fantastic 6 years, great team, great governance, great pupils, great teachers. And again, it was all through school as well, so it ticked the box. And I felt from that, a bad run with the previous school, you know, someone was looking down on me, and I picked up a lovely school.
Yeah. And what happened next? Because after 6 years, did you get itchy feet? Did you want to take on something else?
I think I'd achieved everything I wanted to do at St Clair's. Turned around the results. The school was full. In terms of, pastorally, I think I'd achieved something I'd always wanted to do, which is have a really good dashboard for pastoral progress of the pupils.
Yes.
And I was part of a group of schools called Cognita. I love being part of a group of schools. I love being part of 70 heads all around the world.
Yeah.
Being able to talk to heads from Chile or Thailand or Singapore or other places in the UK was terrific. I enjoyed the conferences and the learning journey we went on as a group was fantastic.
Yeah.
But I, I'd made it clear to my director of education that I was looking for a fresh challenge, and I felt St Clair's was ready for someone else to take on. And I was up another school in the group, which was a lot bigger.
Yeah.
Sat over three sites, again, all through, so it took that all through box.
Yeah.
It was absolutely top of my list. And joined another great community and you know, put into practice some of the things I'd learned from the two previous stores and I had a terrific time there as well.
That's brilliant. You're listening to Talking Heads on Teacher Hub Radio. I'm Oliver in conversation with Simon Altwis.
Hi, my name's Brian and I'm a children's author, but I'm also disabled and a full-time wheelchair user. My stories, The Adventures of Grandad Wheels, are perfect for all primary school children. My books help kids understand about disability, giving them a good laugh at the daft things that Grandad Wheels gets up to with his grandson Charlie. To buy my books and to find out how I can visit your school, either in person or via Zoom, just visit my website, grandadwheels.com. All proceeds go to charity. Hi, my name's Brian and I'm a children's author, but I'm also disabled and a full-time wheelchair user. My stories, The Adventures of Grandad Wheels, are perfect for all primary school children. My books help kids understand about disability, giving them a good laugh at the daft things that Grandad Wheels gets up to with his grandson Charlie. To buy my books and to find out how I can visit your school, either in person or via Zoom, just visit my website, grandadwheels.com. All proceeds go to charity.
So Simon, you've obviously been really fortunate to have those three headships, obviously one that didn't work out, one that was very successful, and then you went into another school. You're not head teacher now though, are you?
No.
So what happened? Did you achieve what you wanted to there and then move on?
Yeah, pretty much. And it was actually a long way from home as well. So
yes.
With all the jobs at Newton, we live in Bristol, I decided that I would never drag the family around to headships. One, because I didn't want to disrupt my children's education. They're all in Bristol Cathedral Choir School, and it was a fantastic school that I wanted to do an unbroken education.
Yes.
I had a bit of a broken education, and I think it had an impact. So, you know, travelling to South Wales wasn't too onerous. It was about 60 minutes to Paul's School. And I got off the job in Buckingham, and the plan was I would drive there and stay over. The kids are a bit older now, and they didn't miss me as much.
Yeah.
And that worked out fine, but I think after a while, you know, I've been staying over during the week for nearly 6-7 years now.
Yeah.
Children started to leave home. So, you know, I felt that I'd put upon my wife far too much by now. Not that she missed me, I don't think. But so I think it was a lifestyle change that both me and her were looking for.
Yes.
She was looking to move on. She got a director of education job with a Mountain Academy Trust. And I had the option of doing that. But I really wanted to, I think I sat down and thought, what's the one thing I've done that really, you know, got me passionate?
Yes.
I really, you know, feel this is what I wanted to do. And there was a company called Steer, who I'd used their pastoral assessment tool in two schools. They launched it as a non-negotiable. And I'd also helped to encourage other heads in company to take the tool on.
Yes.
And I felt it was having a significant impact on the well-being and mental health of children in my school. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have as much impact to as many children as possible.
Yeah.
So, you know, I applied for a post with Steer, and I was lucky to get it. So I'm now a senior education consultant for them, and my task is to make this tool accessible to children in the state sector.
Yeah.
Particularly Mountain Academy Trust is something that I've been tasked with trying to encourage to have a look at what we can offer. And, you know, it gives me an opportunity to have the maximum impact on the maximum number of children as I can. And to do something I'm really passionate about. So,
yeah.
And I felt like I'd achieved everything I could in headship. I did it three times, and I just felt a fourth time.
Yeah.
I couldn't give it everything I wanted to, and I wouldn't do as good a job as I could for the children in that next school.
Yeah, sometimes it is just a case of working out your passion, though, isn't it? Rather than thinking, well, I need to do this because that's what I've done before.
Well, that's the advice I always gave students, you know, yeah, picking A-level was a degree course, and they were stuck. I'd say, what are you passionate about? What yes, are you doing on a wet Tuesday night to 11 o'clock at night, mm-hmm, and not even watch the clock?
Yeah.
And so I took my own advice, and it's worked out brilliantly.
Great. Does it feel very, very different, though, to being in school?
Yes.
Yeah.
I work largely from home. We do meet in some schools. Obviously, yeah, you know, I'm going to schools to visit them to help launch the tool or to encourage them to take it on. And I miss the organism that is a school. You know, the life in it. The children, you know, kicking ball down a corridor, or shirts untucked, or all the things that children do, which just make me laugh. I miss, you know, when I was bored or I was stuck in a task that was driving me mad, I'd get a cup of coffee and walk around the school site and just talk to the children and ask them what the gossip was and that sort of thing and just have a joke with them. And I miss that.
Yes.
And I miss great colleagues. We can share the pain and the joys, the successes of the day. And I miss the volume.
Yes.
And I miss just the life. I always had my door open as a head. Not metaphorically, literally, I had it open.
Yes.
When lesson change happened, I used to love the clatter. I used to love it.
There is a sort of energy to that, isn't there? That when you're not there, you really miss that. Even if at times it drives you mad in being in school sometimes, where you know, the level of noise, if you're trying to do something quiet, it's quite tricky. But just that energy you get from being around people is quite difficult if you miss that, isn't it?
I've been in a couple of schools where the head has tried to take me somewhere quiet to have a conversation about steer. Mm-hmm. And I can see him or her twitching.
Yes.
And I have to say that don't get nervous over this. It's really good for me to hear this.
Yeah.
And it helps them relax and go, look, you know, you can't control that everything's going on in the school. But to be honest, the more life I can hear, I think the better the school. So.
Yeah. It is interesting that people come at it from different angles, though, don't they? Because I know as a head, there was times where you would just want to go into a classroom just to be around children and learning and the buzz of activity. And some teachers would see that as, oh, are you watching out for something, or are you keeping track of me? And actually it was, no, I just need a break from being in the office, or I need a break from doing whatever I was doing. And it's good to be around people. It's good to be around children.
No, I would often do that in briefing in the morning, so I'm going to go for a walk around. But there is no agenda.
Yes.
Please. Don't start preparing whizzy lessons and see
what's going on. Yes.
There would be no judgment. And I'd often judge the amount of time I'd stay because I know that I was ruining the dynamic of the room.
It's quite funny because being on the other side of that fence at times where, you know, the head would arrive and sit down and start chatting to children, you know, as a classroom teacher, and the moment they sort of got up and walked out and the door shut, you'd almost breathe a sigh of relief, or the children would breathe a sigh of relief that they could just relax and get on as they normally would.
Yeah, back to normal.
Yeah. Is there anything you don't miss about the job?
Oh, I've got to be careful here.
I'm not trying to track your answer or anything, but...
No, I think COVID, I think, accentuated, you know...
Yes.
The importance of you, not as an individual, to the community. And I think I found it difficult to cope with the sort of the lightning conductor effect of that, you know, where you're seen, I suppose in a flattering way, as having the answers to... You know, sort of last-minute decisions from the government, and trying to react to that. So I felt, you know, that sort of red tape and bureaucracy, the sort of smashing of innovation, hard to cope with. I felt so sometimes the scrutiny of inspectorates, you know, hard to manage. I mean, I trained an inspector to try and understand from both angles. That's been a logic with all my career, you know, why I've worked in independent schools, state schools, academies, boarding schools, because you can only form an opinion of those types of schools or those types of jobs if you've done them.
Yes.
And I didn't enjoy being an inspector. I didn't like seeing the terror on people's faces as I turned up in their school.
No. How many inspections did you do?
I think a handful of the other thing.
Yes.
Eight or nine. And I actually changed jobs, which meant I was living in the right place, because I worked for ESTA, which is the Welsh Inspectorate.
Yes.
So being in an English school, I didn't have the right credentials at that point. Yeah. So it sort of ended in two ways. But I think, you know, I also think, to answer your question, the children were never an issue for me
yes.
in the whole of my career. Even challenging children, I enjoyed what impact I could have on them. But I would warn people that it's the adults you might have an issue with.
Yes.
I think that shocked me when I first ever got into leadership, whatever level.
Yeah.
Because I made an assumption that everyone felt the same way as me, in that they're enjoying what they're doing, they had no axe to grind. If they were unhappy, they would say. And you know, there are quite a lot of people who aren't in that position.
Yeah.
Whatever adult they are, whether they're staff, a parent, or some other stakeholder. So I feel that that was the biggest challenge, was, you know,
yeah,
dealing with adults. And I've never had so many people cry in my office as a head.
That's another thing people don't tell you about it until it happens, and you are almost that sponge sometimes for people, where you're soaking up all that emotion and dealing with it in a way that doesn't make a fuss so nobody else knows, but it goes on.
Yeah, I would have to point out that it's not because I felt that they cried because of the reason that it is.
No.
I even asked my PA, I said, why are they crying? She said, because you've got a friendly face.
Yeah.
And you become a part of people's lives, don't you? You know that they've got cancer, or they've been a miscarriage, or there's trouble domestically, or and people trust you. And they share these things with
you. Sometimes it is the only place they can share that, isn't it? Where you're almost impartial and you're on their side, and it can come out like that, can't it?
Yeah, I didn't mind that element of it, but I did feel that sometimes people didn't have a clear understanding of what it was like to be in my shoes.
Yes.
And things I could and couldn't tell them. So I think, you know, my advice for your head is, you know, prepare yourself for that.
Yes.
And don't take it personally.
Definitely not. No. Simon, it's been really good talking to you. If people want to get in touch with you, how can they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. I've got quite an unusual surname, so there's not likely to be anyone like that.
No.
I'm quite happy for them to get contact by email.
So yeah.
It's simonantwis@steer.global.
Yeah.
Those are the two best places to get
on. And you're happy for people to connect on LinkedIn as well? Just be in touch with
them. Yeah, and I'm happy to, if they want it, to give me advice or fill up on any conversation we had today.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. It's been really good today. I've enjoyed it.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. And if you've enjoyed listening, why not tweet @TeacherHubRadio and tell us what's made you think and who we should be talking to next. Thanks, Simon.
Thank you, Robert.
Teacher wellbeing should be a priority for all schools, whether you're